Today's guest, Steve Spence, is author of one of the highest rated books on Amazon about money. Money, plain and simple. What the institutions and the elite don't want you to know. Today, he's going to share with us some key money principles that have helped him make incredible investing decisions, predict recessions, predict hyperinflation, and all money concepts that you as a savvy investor should know. This is Building Passive Income and Wealth Through Real Estate, where we guide you through the relentless pursuit of financial independence. I'm your host, Justin Moy, managing partner at Perpetual Wealth Capital, a multifamily real estate investing firm that lets everyday people invest passively in income-producing apartment buildings. Hey, investors. Welcome back to another episode of Building Passive Income and Wealth Through Real Estate. Today, I am sitting down with an extremely dynamic guest. That's Steve Spence. Now, Steve is a military veteran and corporate employee turned entrepreneur with an incredible understanding of the U.S. monetary system. Now, he's a wealth of knowledge about money, wealth, investing, and is author of one of Amazon's top-rated finance books, Money, Plain and Simple, What the Institutions and the Elite Don't Want You to Know. Steve, we're really excited to have you here on the show.
I'm excited to be here, Justin. Thank you.
So tell us about your background specifically with finances and I guess the journey that led you up to where you are today and publishing a book.
Part of my story in the introduction of the book, I just thought there was to make more money and trade your time for money and just work harder and harder and harder. I knew there was something about real estate, but I just didn't have the money to get into it. So when I was forced out of the corporate world, I took a voluntary retirement and I told my wife, I said, I want to make this happen with the real estate. And so I was already dabbling with it a little bit, but I didn't have a lot of extra money and it looked scary. And I did some research. I found out ways to take out my 401k and help me invest with that and not pay taxes on it. And it's all legal. So here I am on this journey with real estate investing. And I started to learn about money. The first book I read was, well, I hated to read too. And they said, everybody I was learning from says, you got to read Kiyosaki's Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And so I read that. And it was a mind shift change. It really was for me because I was forced to do something that I didn't know anything about. And then I started learning about, I didn't know anything about money where I thought I did. So I started studying money. Basically, I was a production manager by the time I left with a defense contractor. And I was the guy that people came to for financial advice. And I said, the idea is to make less money when you retire and then you pay less taxes. And I'm like, in my new mindset, it's like, why would I want to make less money? That's not a good way of living. So I had to change my whole mindset to figure out ways to make more money, not to be greedy, but that's not what God has for you, you know? And so I did it through real estate.
I call that planning to retire poor.
Yeah.
And anybody who maybe doesn't fully understand exactly how we got to planning on retiring poor is a lot of the benefits, put air quotes, the tax benefits of a lot of these retirement accounts, you either pay taxes now or you pay taxes later. And the way that you come out on top in a certain way with those is if you anticipate being in a lower tax bracket later, okay, you want to pay taxes later. If you're in a lower tax bracket now, you want to pay your taxes now. But to me, that's not really a tax advantage. It's not like you get out of paying taxes like you can with real estate if you're using certain strategies. And like you said, it's planning on retiring poor. I'm going to retire on less than I have now by a significant amount. And that's not something that sounds like you're on board with me. I wasn't comfortable with that. I didn't like accepting that. So you were kind of forced into, I guess, learning about the financial space, whether it was real estate. Did you explore any other kind of alternative forms of investment or was real estate really the main charger for you?
Real estate was the starter. And then I started studying, I heard about gold and silver, but a lot of people poo-poo on gold and silver because it doesn't really make you money. And so I had to understand why it doesn't make you money. But now I'm a big gold and silver advocate and I cover it well in the book. This is all high level stuff. This is not boring reading. This is what everybody should know if you live in the world. Yeah. If you're going to use money, you should know these basic things. The way I explain gold and silver is that it's like an insurance policy. Like you would have on your real estate, you'd have insurance. So if your money burns down, you know, you still have gold and silver to fall back on. Because the reason why I find gold and silver so important in your portfolio, it just sits in your safe. It sits wherever, but it doesn't really move. Everything that moves around it is what moves. So the dollar, When gold goes up, that means the dollar went down. The gold never changed. It's the dollar that changed. Yeah. So why is that happening? All those questions start coming up. Why does the dollar go down? And so you start asking these questions, and that's part of your investment strategies. So now you can start predicting where things are going for you as an investor, and you can make better use of your money. The other things I got into, actually, I'm studying a little bit. I know you don't like this, but I'm looking into dividend stocks, just dabbling. My wife, she still works and she has a 401k. So we do have that. I use that to help me buy real estate.
And it's not that I don't like dividend stocks. It's just that I think that so many people kind of praise that as being the passive income kind of king or queen. And it's just not. When you really dive into the numbers, it's not. And so if you have it for diversity's sake and you really understand where it fits into your portfolio, I think that's great. But I think people are saying, I'm going to retire off of dividend stocks. Well, in a healthy, balanced portfolio, that's pretty hard to make significant money unless you're very heavily chasing high yield dividend stocks. And most advisors would advise against that because it's just a little bit more volatile in your portfolio. So I agree with the diversifying of what you have to really create that life that you want. Now, I have to ask, with the book, it has a great hook there, you know, what the institutions and the elite don't want you to know. So without spoiling it too much, what do the institutions and the elite not want us to know?
I guess the tagline is all money is debt. Mm-hmm. So what we call money is not really money. This is where you got to get your head wrapped around. I use debt to propel my business into more houses using debt leveraging. But once you start understanding that all debt cannot be repaid, it just adds to itself. When I started paying attention, I'm like, wow, look at our national debt. That's one of them. The next one is the Federal Reserve. It's not federal, nor is it reserve. It's a central bank. It has the illusion of being part of the government, but it really isn't. And they're the ones that's controlling the United States, our money. That's another mind blower. And once you understand what they're doing, I predicted inflation 2 years ago, not because I'm a genius. It's like, well, they do this, this is going to happen. And now you have the Secretary of Treasury. She was on TV last week, said, I didn't know this was going to happen.
And they do. They know exactly what's happening. They're in control of it. Well, let me go back to your first point. So you had said, is it all money is debt? What do you mean by that exactly?
All currency is debt. I guess that's kind of one of my beginnings was the term fiat. And I hear Kiyosaki in his book talk about, I had to look it up. I was like, what is this fiat? It's not a car. And I joke, but seriously, I didn't know what fiat was. And so once you start looking, it's basically fake money is what it is. The Treasury would create a bond and then they would sell it to the Federal Reserve. They create the notes, which is the dollar bills that you hold in your wallet. And that's kind of like the down and dirty way of doing it. You know, there's more to it. It just starts out of nothing. They create it. And on my website, promoted as moneyplainandsimplebook.com, I put a blog in there and I have Jerome Powell, which is the Fed chair. They had him on 60 Minutes, just a little clip where he says, you just create money from nothing. He says, yeah, that's pretty much what we do. It's like, oh my gosh.
So many people who understand real estate investing, they like that hard asset, that real asset, because it's not made of nothing. Its value doesn't just lose 8% all in 1 year because of something totally out of your control, which will happen to the dollar for inflation. And I like what you said earlier that yes, they're a federal entity, but really they're a worldwide organization. Other countries look at what our Federal Reserve is doing and adjusting policy for that. Our dollar cannot be so drastic because we are so interlinked with other countries' finances that if our dollar tanks, other currencies will tank and the whole world will drag down with it. So really, they're an enormous powerhouse that, like you said, controls something somewhat artificial. Money doesn't really exist. And I think people are seeing that with the big cryptocurrency kind of explosion too, because they're saying, okay, this is something finite. This is something that you don't just make it up. It's going to stop. The Fed can't just come in and say, hey, now we're going to make more. Now we're going to pull it back. So I really like that. How did you come to making the book? So we were talking earlier. So you kind of learned these things yourself. Sound like you did a lot of research on the internet, maybe yourself, and kind of opened your eyes to a lot of these. Does the book talk a lot about actual investment strategies? Is it more so like economics and monetary policy and how you've predicted certain things? Or tell us about that.
So the book, again, is plain and simple. And as an investor, these are things you should know as a foundation. I work with a lot of investors and they don't see the fragility of something happens in China, we can feel it over here. It's all interconnected. I just want to go back to what you were saying about crypto. I got into crypto heavy. I started buying into it. And then I realized, and luckily I got out before it crashed, but I got out of it. Crypto is beautiful. When you start studying the central bank system, including the Federal Reserve, that's global, all debts transacted in dollars throughout the world. Now, Russia's trying to upset that apple cart, but they're whittling away at the dollar because we weaponized the dollar against through sanctions and stuff. And these power countries, China and Russia, they don't want to be controlled by us through money. So that's one side of it. But what you said about crypto is what's beautiful about crypto is you talk about central banks, crypto's decentralized. And that's the beauty of it. But what I talk about in the book is the people in charge of the money run the world. That's basically, that's right, like tagline. And they're not going to give up to crypto. We go, oh yeah, you win, you got a better system. They run the governments. I put cases in the book where they're going to try to make it their own. They're going to try to go to the digital dollar and they're going to make laws that outlaw crypto. I listed a few countries, but other countries have gone for it. El Salvador, they adopted crypto as their currency and they're getting penalized now by the rest of the world for it. So it's got a lot of growth to go through, but I don't think now's the time. For me personally, I'm not giving any advice, but I'm backing out. I'm going to watch out and see how this plays out.
Because we're at that big point where do people adapt this? Do governments adapt this? Like you said, the people in control don't want it. Crypto specific, yes, but that comes with any big change. People who run those existing structures, of course, don't want that change. And so how do you see that essentially playing out? Because I know, I think it was late last year, El Salvador had adopted, I think it was just Bitcoin. You could pay your taxes in it. They had ATMs popping up all around. They were the first country to have like Bitcoin ATMs. And now you're saying that other countries don't want that to happen. So they're penalizing them. Do you feel like that's going to come over to America? Do you feel like that's something that's going to happen here in the future? Or so two totally opposite camps. How do you feel about your opinion and what facts did you use to arrive to it?
Well, so I wrote a blog on my website. I wrote about this and it's titled My Accountant Asked Me. And what I wrote about was when I did my taxes this year, and it was there last year. I just didn't pay attention to it last year. But on the first page of everybody's taxes, did you buy or sell any cryptocurrency? So it's coming to the point, the government's slowly locking in on it. We'll just say Bitcoin because that's the number one, right? It threatens the dollar. It really does because it is decentralized and they call it the people's currency. It might not be Bitcoin in the near future that ends up winning. Maybe it's something else. But there's really no privacy. They say it's privacy, but when it gets on the blockchain, that's one of the things they taught is how the blockchain is public to everybody to see what transactions were happening. It doesn't say who and what. It just shows you where the money is.
Right.
I'm not really an expert on this. But there's privacy coins like Monero and Pirate Chain and all this stuff that's cropping up. They're not doing a whole lot right now, but they might offer what people want. And I'm not saying to be able to do like drug deals or whatever you would do. They also say black market stuff, right? But so is the dollar.
I think that was the first time I'd actually heard about cryptocurrencies. It was people using it to buy like fake IDs because it was untraceable and you would buy them. There were some websites that were really popular when I was in high school, people buying fake IDs. And then one of them, I forgot what it was. They said, oh, now they're taking this thing called Bitcoin. I don't know what it is, but I just pay over here, then I give them that. And so it's so funny to think about now, if you would have understood the value of it now, those were thousands and thousands of dollars for a fake ID now. So whether it was a legitimate concern or a deterrent, but like you said, the cash is used on the black market all the time. So it's just changing the means of it. So I want to go back to you, what you had said a little bit, essentially about you predicting the kind of inflationary environment that we're in now, a couple of years ago, some basic things investors should know that you cover in the book. I'm seeing these turn of events. I know, hey, hardcore inflation's coming in a couple of years, or maybe a recession's coming in a couple of years. What are some of those things on a high level that investors need to keep their finger on the pulse of?
What started with me was the banking market. I talked very lightly about it's called the repo market. So the repurchasing operations. And it's very boring stuff. But in September of 2018, that's when I was getting into this and learning about this. And by October, I couldn't get my money out of the stock market fast enough. It did crash. Mm-hmm. The Dow was around 25, 26,000. And I think it dropped to like 19 or something like that. And it recovered a little bit. So I got some of my money back because I couldn't get out as quick as I wanted to. So that scared me because I finally had something worth losing. And plus I was losing my job and I needed this money to start my business of real estate. So inflation is basically too much money printing. Money has to have a place to go. Those are the rules, right? Money has to go somewhere. So have you ever heard of contillionaires?
I don't think so.
Again, high level stuff. But a contillionaire is the person, a group of people like the bankers, they're closest to money printing. So they get the money first at its current value that it is printed. But as it goes through the system, they call it the trickle-down effect or whatever, and it gets down to normal people. That's a year or two later, and inflation's already kicked in. So what they used it for, they had more power on their purchasing power, and we get the same amount of money, but it's kind of got weakened, if you will. And so inflation is too much money that's printed. It's an inflation of the money supply. What we're seeing, we're calling inflation, but we're seeing the effects of inflation, which is measured by like the CPI or the consumer price. So now what we're seeing is there's too much money out in the system, and the box of cereal that you would buy doesn't change. It's the dollars that takes to buy it changes. It takes more dollars to buy that. They try first to trick you with shrinkflation first, so it doesn't really feel like that. Be like, there's like one chip in this bag. What's going on? That's the thing to look out for. So we went into COVID. What did they do? Their answer was money. It doesn't matter what administration, but you can vote Republican, you can vote Democrat. They're all going to print money. It doesn't matter. I don't care who's behind the desk. They have to print money because the system is broken. Just look at our national debt.
And that's one thing too. It's why some people just throw caution to the wind when they hear things. Like when I heard how much money they were printing to bail us out of COVID, really, I knew that that was going to be an enormous problem. A lot of people didn't seem to impact them because they thought, oh, well, our debt's in the trillions of dollars anyways. Who cares? Money's made up. It doesn't really matter. But now we're seeing it when you have to pay 80, 90, 100 bucks to fill up your gas tank when it used to take 40 or 50 and the groceries are more expensive. I mean, we're seeing the impacts of that. And I think people who didn't really notice that 2% inflation every year are now starting to realize like, wow, inflation's real. And just because I realized it much faster in 1 year, I mean, we realized essentially 4 years of inflation in 1 year last year, 4 years all at once. And it's not going to go back down. It's still going to continue. It's not going to go negative 2% next year to make up for it. It's going to continue to raise. That's really, really important for people to understand. So those are some of the basic things that people should know. I mean, essentially how money moves and how it works and what kind of complementary assets there are. Like you mentioned gold and the dollar, real estate. And what are some other ways that people can build anything else that, listeners should know to make informed investing decisions?
Well, so we're all in different places. There could be a $100 million person listening and there could be a $100 person listening. So it all depends where your starting point is. So first things first is how are you going to deal with inflation? But as an investor, let's assume that there's some money there, right? I think right now what I see coming, and some are already claiming it, we're entering a recession. I'm a Burr model investor for single family homes. And I tried to recession proof myself. I stayed in low income, just like C-class type properties. Sure. And I try to give them a really good property. So I fixed it up really nice and I want them to stay there. But these are working people. Those are the ones I believe that are going to be the last ones to lose their job. That's the way I see it. I need to think employment. I don't do Section 8. I don't want to be reliant on the government as little as possible for my houses. So if you go into the luxury homes and you're getting those high rents and really think that these are probably managers, these are probably senior managers, and they might be the ones that get cut. So if you're in that market, I would say you should have some reserve set aside. I'm doing that as well. I'm trying to build up my cash at the moment. There will be buying opportunity. I think we're coming up on some really good buying opportunities. And that's what I say is I don't like cash, but cash is, they call it dry powder, right?
We've seen the same thing as well as historically those class A assets or those luxury assets taking the biggest hit during downturns, during recessions. And so really being that working class asset, that's why a lot of people like to do that. They like to be that working class investor. And it doesn't always mean Section 8 or low income housing or what we call LIHTC. it's something kind of in the middle. Maybe it's B, B minus, or C plus assets. So I really, really appreciate that kind of insight, because a lot of people, when they think of apartment investing or real estate investing, they think like, I want to have really, really nice trophy assets. And those aren't always the best types of investments. They have a room in the portfolio, but most people are not quite there with their portfolio where they would benefit as much from trophy assets. I really, really like the conversation. I mean, there's so much to learn. I'm a big, big book reader myself. Any parting words for the listeners, and then wrap it up by letting us know where people can snag the book?
So like I said, Money Plain and Simple is less than 100 pages long. In the very last chapter, I put where to go for help, for more information about all these different subjects, because I'm not the expert on it. I just want to set the foundation. Right. I've translated the book in Spanish. It's available. I don't even speak Spanish.
No worries.
It's on Amazon, but all my links are on my, and then we're working on doing it in Portuguese. This is a global book. And also I did an audio version of it. So it's an audio on Amazon as well, and other places, Barnes & Noble. So if you go to moneyplainandsimplebook.com, the first page, I have free downloads there if you want to check out the book and see if you like it, if it's something you're interested in. And I wish you the best. And I'd love to hear from you. There's a contact page on that website. And if you want to push back on me, I'm welcome to do that. I'll write about it. That's how you grow when you stretch.
Absolutely. Well, thanks so much for coming on, Steve. I mean, we're going to put, Steven mentioned the website earlier in the episode. We're going to put that link in the show notes. If you haven't already, of course, make sure you download our free book, The Definitive Guide to Building Generational Wealth and Passive Cash Flow Through Multifamily Real Estate. Steve, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.